All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome. Nice to see everyone on this snowy day, the venturesome people in person and those at home, maybe keeping yourself safe and cozy. So welcome. So my name is Tim Guile, one of the guiding teachers here. And we'll start with meditation, and then I'll have a short recap talk from last week's exploration of these oxygenating pictures, and then some small group discussion and exploration for yourselves. All right. So this is our last talk on this series, on this year-long series on the oxygenating pictures. And it's been an interesting journey for myself, exploring them along with you, exploring each picture, each image. And so this month, my idea was to kind of look at them as a whole and what kind of message they teach as a whole. And certainly on one level, it's like showing this whole journey of us as spiritual practitioners, where that journey starts, the different places in it, and where it can lead to. So in some ways, it's like a depiction of the hero's journey, all the different struggles and the blind alleys that we go in, and then eventually seeing into the depth of the possibilities of our practice, how there's an externalization of that goal through the image of the ox. And we search for the ox, we find the ox, struggle with the ox, and then the journey takes an internal direction as we start to see that spiritual journey becomes much more it's not externalized, it's really seeing the internal process of it. So in this way, it's helpful just to know what kind of terrain are we walking upon? What's the roadmap that's in front of us? What are the possibilities as we start to recognize as they arise? And certainly as the journey unfolds, depending on how deeply we open to those kind of become new set points, if you will. But the journey is very much circular, that we can find ourselves going back to earlier pictures and going to more further along pictures and kind of going back and forth, depending on the circumstances of our lives, the situation of our lives, the difficulty we may encounter, just the state of our minds. Sometimes our attention is much more settled, sometimes much more distracted, more dispersed. So the downside of a roadmap like this is that we want to orient where we are. And sometimes we get a little fixed on that. We want to say, okay, I'm at picture number 3 and I want to get to picture number 4. It's like, oh no, I've dropped back to picture number 2 and I've failed at this. I'm a terrible meditator. And we can compare and contrast ourselves and everyone else around us. And so that way it's not so helpful if we hold it that way, that sense of comparing. As my friend and teaching colleague Narayan likes to say, how your practice is doing is none of your business. I think that's such a helpful thing to hold, because the mind wants to orient. It wants to figure out where we're going. And it can get in our way. We can get lost in our way. And especially when we get caught in that self-diminishment or that sense of pride, like, wow, I think I'm on picture number 6 or 7 or whatever it might be. And as soon as we do that, of course, then we've kind of reverted back. So it's helpful to have that quality of innocence and quality of wonder as a practice unfolds. And at the same time, knowing, kind of getting a sense of discernment. It's part of what happens as we mature in our practice, is you start to be able to notice how our minds are, in this very meditation, in this period of practice. How is our minds in different scenarios, different situations? Daily practice, consistent, no matter what happens, you practice every day. One of the things that gives you is this gift to meet your mind in lots of situations, lots of circumstances. Like if we were all meditators who only meditated when our minds were very pleasant and concentrated and steady, maybe a very small percentage. it's maybe analogous that if we only went out into the out hiking when it was sunny and beautiful out versus when we're going out when it's raining or snowing, we don't see this whole array of our minds. And our meditation and our Dharma practice is a little fragile because it needs the conditions to be just right. But having that willingness to meet ourselves, to meet the moment day after day, we start to have this capacity to hold our attention or to hold our experience in the whole array that starts to arise. And this series of pictures also points to this tendency for us to get a little stuck in our practice, get stuck in how we think our practice should be. So just from a meditative technique perspective, sometimes we find that something like the breath is a really strong anchor, just focusing on the breath in a particular area, releasing everything else is a very helpful technique. It's very helpful to steady our attention. It's helpful to ground ourselves. It builds X level concentration. And just as these pictures show, at some point, it becomes counterproductive. It's too tight of an anchor. We need to learn to open up to see the whole array of our experience. The other side of this picture, let's say we are really like a choiceless awareness, just that quality of just meeting the moment how it is. We just love to see things arising and passing away. Sometimes if we plug in a sleepy mind, a distracted mind, it becomes more like choiceless fantasy. Our minds are going this way and that way. We don't have enough steadiness. So that's what I mean by that growing discernment as our practice matures, as we gain experience, we learn this kind of sense, okay, what's the right way to practice in this moment? What's our right way to show up, to relate to myself and to whatever I'm observing, what I'm learning from that. So I want to touch upon three kind of themes that change through these pictures, through these 10 pictures. You know, how our sense of the ox changes, what that ox means, where the ox resides, how our effort changes. And also how that sense of me as the meditator also changes. If you look back at all those pictures, each of those things really change throughout that. There's times when, you know, effort is so strong and just everything is being put into holding on that ox. Other times there's like no effort at all. It's like the effort is toward releasing all effort. And other times, you know, the ox, of course, is like hidden. It's unseen. We don't know where it is. We're bewildered in the maze of the mountains and the ravines, you know, the jungles of our minds. Right? And then we start to see the ox, and then we get glimpses of the ox, and we try to catch the ox, tame it. And eventually, there's a sense of harmony between us and the ox, and then the ox disappears. And of course, that sense of us as the meditator, how that changes, how that, there's a quality of really embodiment and really in a sense of me trying to do the path, me trying to work the path. And there's a place where that sense of you falls away. So let's look at the ox for a minute. So the ox, what it represents, you know, when I started this series, a year ago, you know, I held the ox as in different ways, and it's changed as I go through these series. But my favorite way to look at it is basically it's our true nature, our essence of our true nature, and how that purifies, gets purified, that there's a quality of that true nature being obscured, being covered up by our hindrances, by our reactivity, by our delusion, our ignorance. And we kind of learn to work through that, to see through that, to actually see the ox just as a very, you know, we kind of, the wildness comes out of it. So instead of the wildness and that, you know, going this way and that, there's that true nature represented by the ox becomes very much stabilized. We become stabilized with it. And what these pictures that how he's throwing us these curveballs that once we kind of got to that riding the ox home, we think, okay, we've done it. We've achieved what we came up to achieve. And then the next picture, the ox is forgotten. The ox is gone. And that's such a, it's like, it makes us question, okay, what was all this struggle about? You know, if we didn't do that struggle, we would never have encountered the ox in that way. The way I look at it that way, the ox actually, instead of being this externalization of our true nature, my true nature is out there somewhere. I've got to find it. We realize we've been carrying it inside ourselves this whole time. And there's no longer a search. And there's that quality of tranquility, the quality of ease that comes into the ox forgotten, and the self remains. So in our practice, how we hold, you know, what we really are, our essence of what we are, it really changes. You know, we have maybe start off practice with this sense of there's something wrong with me or something not working. There's so much suffering in my life. I'm trying to find some way through that. Perhaps you've come to practice after exhausting a lot of other possibilities. I get this possession, I get that possession, I get this relationship, this experience, this job, this role. And yet through all of those, there's still this kind of quality of suffering. Something isn't quite right through all of those. And we have this idea, I need to just polish up this sense of me. And through practice, we start to see that sense of me is really something that's transitory, that arises and passes away, that doesn't have the same quality of stability and solidity that we always took it to be. So in some ways, this is really a crisis, because it's like everything we've done in our lives, we suddenly realize it doesn't make sense in the same way. On the other hand, it's really good news, because then we realize if that sense of me falls away, if I don't believe it in the same way, then there's a fluidity of meeting all of experience. As I'm talking, I'm realizing that I'm kind of blurring these three together, the effort, the ox, and the self. And really, they're just, in some ways, you could say it's all part of the same process. But the ox, that sense of who we are, that spiritual essence, our true nature, is very much tied with who and what we are. And that changes through these practices, it should change through our meditation practice, our Dharma practice. So now let's look at effort for a moment. So effort is also a really obvious quality that we see in the verses. We also see in the images that there's this intense search, you know, it's literally going all over the place. Then there's the finally seeing the ox, and there's a moment of stillness, a moment of that effort falling away. It's like we're glimpsing our true nature, and we realize, okay, it's just right here. And then, of course, our ego comes in, and we want to try to capture that, work hard at catching that ox, and then we're struggling to try to tame it. And then the ox becomes tame, and then we're able to ride it home. I mean, how many of us in the room, you know, both the Zoom room and physical room, have you had some moment of insight or a moment of an experience of meditation where it just feels like things are just effortless? There's a quality of deep peace, quality of opening, a quality of stillness, right? And then what does the mind naturally do? Is like, I want more of that. I want to get that. I want to get back to that. And that's that ox, and suddenly runs away. It's lost in the woods, lost in the ravines, in the forest. And this is such a human nature thing for us to do, that we have these moments and we just start to really try to chase them. But our very act of chasing makes them go further away. This is one of the messages of effort. And it's these pictures, in particular around effort, there's such a profound teaching around how effort eventually fails us. That eventually effort, we have to release that. And through the effort of taming the ox and riding the ox home, then that effort becomes no longer so needed. We don't need that, the ropes and the whips. You don't need that intensity, right? And then the effort changes to that releasing, all effort, releasing any sense of separation. You know, example of effort I gave last week was around noting, the noting practice. You know, very robust, helpful practice. I've used it a lot myself. When you just simply note this moment's experience, something as simple as breathing in, breathing out, walking meditation, stepping, stepping, or placing, lifting, shifting, we can get very elaborate. We can take something like a pattern of mind and notice, okay, judging mind, planning mind, allows us to observe without getting so caught in it. Also gives us this feedback to stabilize. And it's very helpful. And at some point, it becomes a little too loud. It becomes too heavy-handed because we're always injecting a comment on this moment's experience. So eventually, noting is meant to be released. It's meant to fall away from us. If you stay too tied to that, something like the breath, something like noting, it's like we're kind of staying in that riding the ox home phase. Right, that's one of the important messages, is that when you feel like you've really mastered the technique, you really feel like you're a good meditator, that's the time to start to forget everything you know about meditation, in a way, to forget even the sense of you as the meditator and all the effort that's tied to you meditating. That brings me to that third section, the section around the sense of me. It's so intertwined with what we've been talking about all this little talk here. But me as a meditator, there's a sense of lack, of inadequacy, of something I want to gain from practice. And so I apply my effort, my will, my energy around it. This is natural. It's like we have to start where we are. We use our skills and tools we've cultivated in other areas of life and apply it to meditation. Right? Our will, our commitment, our grit, all those qualities. And if the practice works, that sense of me who's doing that starts to dissolve. It starts to become less and less distinct. That's what the practice is designed to do. When we say, meet the moment with a steady attention, but without judgment, without trying to alter it, without trying to change it, that's taking away all the things the self uses to engage in the world. If we're meeting the moment without trying to change it in any way, where am I in that? How am I located? Right? As if we're really open to that, there can be this time of disquiet or a sense of apprehension or even fear. And that's one thing I wish these pictures had it conveyed, that moment of that fear. That fear, that sense of me, that sense of self, you realize that that's starting to fall away. It's conditional. It arises and passes away. You actually see that. And in that seeing, the self gets a little nervous. It's like, well, who's going to run this show if I'm not involved? Who am I going to be if I'm not me? And that stage is really in those pictures of when the self remains and the self is forgotten. And there's that stage. And then, of course, there's the deeper elements, is that sense of separation of me and you, of self and other, falls away. There's these depths of the intensity of opening, of seeing that lack of separation. And then there's the peace of that. There's the falling into that. And of course, the final picture is that of coming back into the marketplace, of this integration of our practice. And that we do actually all the way along. And how do I show up in this moment from what I've learned? How has the practice transformed me? Not so much in an intellectual way, but we just find ourselves, there's a different capacity that starts to arise. We meet people in a different way. We meet familiar situations in a very different capacity of our minds and our hearts. And so these 10 pictures, you know, hold them as a loose roadmap that's somewhat linear, but also very much back and forth, that we're going to jump around to the different pictures. And not to have self-judgment around that jumping, to realize as you jump back to picture one or picture two, sometimes that's actually a deepening of your practice as you're integrating and realizing, okay, how do I meet this situation? How do I meet this unresolved pain in my life, unresolved hurt in my life? It's like you're starting to say, okay, I want to meet all of this. I want to integrate all of this. And sometimes it feels like you're back to just trying to find that ox. But each time there's this realization, you understand the perspective of the journey. You understand in a way that transforms everything. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a couple moments, letting those words settle. All right, so welcome back. Still hearing me online? Good. All right, so in a moment we'll have you join into groups of, let's say, 4 to 5 people. And Kathy will put you guys into groups online, breakout groups. But the topic I'd like to explore, we'll do this for about 20 minutes. And these groups are a chance to simply, you know, voice your experience in your practice, how you work with the Dharma in your daily life, how you work with this topic in your practice, both on retreat or in daily life, however your practice shows up for you. And particularly around these three aspects. Okay, so the aspect of effort, the aspect of kind of what the spiritual journey means for you, kind of the ox, if you will, the sense of the ox or the your true nature, and also that sense of you as the meditator, how that changes and evolves throughout your practice. You know, so it might be the overall trajectory, how you started practice and how it is now. Maybe you could talk about how, you know, in a week's time that sometimes, you know, that effort really has to change. And kind of give examples of how you integrate that, how you work with that, kind of shifting back and forth between effort, levels of where the ox is, levels of that sense of you, that relationship of who I am as a meditator. Right? And if you like to, you can talk about some of the pictures, like which ones particularly resonate with you, which ones are particularly bewildering for you, which ones you feel like you might hang into too long, or which ones you yearn for, whatever it might be. And these ones are just, again, you're just sharing and you're listening, not giving advice or suggestions, but just holding each other's gift of sharing. Right? Does that make sense? Is that enough structure there? So in person, I think we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right, welcome back, everyone. I think everyone's back now. Yeah. All right, so we have some space now for any questions, any sharing around this, or anything about your practice. And so you're welcome to raise your hand, you know, here in the room. We can have you come up so they can see you online or online. You can raise your virtual hand. All right, Jean, go ahead. Let's see. Let's make sure. Beth, can you make sure you have permission to unmute? Yeah, so you do. Okay.
I got it.
You can hear me now? Yeah, okay. I, for one, have really enjoyed this past year. I don't often hear people just ecstatic about 10 ox herding pictures, but I'm really grateful that this was our avenue of study, our focus for this year. I think I would have to say relaxation has happened that has never occurred to me before. And I realize that the teachings are there. It's how and whether or not I'm receptive to what is taught. But I can say that as a result of these pictures, the trajectory of my practice is no longer up a steep incline. I'm not slogging up a hill now. I'm more, it's like a mesa. I'm wandering along and without a sense of urgency to get anywhere or to meet some marker. I can wander at this place and I'm not guilty for wandering. I don't have to stay on a straight and narrow trajectory. I can move around, and I'm just, it's been so freeing for me that I just want to express my gratitude for the selection of the Ten Ox Herding pictures for 2022. Hello, thank you, Tim.
You're very welcome. Yeah, Tori and I chose that topic together, and I'm glad that was so fruitful. And yeah, that movement from that, yeah, the constraint of our practice and that tightness around the practice sounds like that has really loosened up, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
It has.
All right. Thank you for being on this journey with all of us.
It's a pleasure.
Right. Anyone else? Yes, go ahead, Carlito.
Hey, I probably have asked this before. Just maybe some tips and tricks on how to deal with just some of the heavy, samsara in the world. Seeing people deep suffering, and how to deal with that. I mean, I guess the obvious answer is with compassion, in some compassionate way. But, it hits me like a ton of bricks. And, yeah.
And so how to work with the depth of sorrow, depth of suffering in the world, and how to meet that. What happens now when you meet that? What's your experience?
I just get really sad to see the sadness. I saw this very young kid walking down the street in Ballard, completely out of his mind, obviously homeless and wearing shelter clothes, and it's just just a kid.
Would you say that if you look at your natural tendency, do you tend to connect with the suffering, just even before you practice? Is that kind of a natural inclination, or is it more of a new thing, the opening to the suffering?
No, I think I was I was well protected, ensconced in a barrier, the practice. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, as I mentioned in my group, the sensitivity piece. Practice has definitely opened me up much more to just seeing and being empathic, I guess. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The reason I ask is sometimes, you know, if we have that natural tendency to be really, you know, sensitive and connected to people, it's a different way of working than if we're opening through, you know, practice, and we're just actually starting to, you know, open our eyes to how much suffering there is in the world.
Right. Yeah, no, I think I see what you're saying, Tim. Yeah, no, I think inherently I am very connective and sensitive to other emotions and feelings. And then my, you know, my response then was to try to block that, right? And create some form of mental buffer. And then sort of the practice itself is tearing it down.
Okay. Yeah. So that's helpful. Cause you know, sometimes we, this isn't describing you, but just to kind of have a completeness of as answering that, we can sometimes feel very, you know, connected in our sense of privilege or sense of ease in our life, and, you know, and a little disconnected from the suffering of others. And the practice has a way of really opening us to that. And if that's, I hear that's not the case, that's partially what's going on, but there's, you know, there's other part. But if we're really starting to open to the suffering, then it's good to just see how much can I open to that? How much can I let myself feel that and be impacted by it? And at some point, it's going to feel like it's too much. And kind of the way you're describing it is just the way your set of conditions is that you're naturally more sensitive and you've learned how to kind of block that off. And the practice is kind of taking away that mechanism, that way of kind of keeping yourself buffered from the suffering. So you're kind of in some ways unprotected from it, unremoved from it in a way that, so it becomes overwhelming. Is that kind of the essence of what you're talking about?
Yeah. And it's interesting because I can deal with it in the moment, but then later, it's like you said a few days ago, you know, you don't like to watch a particular movie because it has a residue that comes back. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like that. I mean, yeah. It's like, you know, like tonight's sit, and there it was sitting in my body and in my shoulders and in my jaw. And it's, you know, I got to physically work through this stuff.
Yeah. So part of it is learning to recognize that sooner. You know, so we often learn it after the fact, like, okay, that was too much. That was exceeded my capacity. And we have to kind of work through, you know, caring for ourselves and letting that work out of our system. But reflecting on that, you start to recognize it sooner. Ideally, you notice, okay, this is kind of, my tank is overly full. My capacity is already kind of maxed out. And then there's this, you know, there's kind of that wise discernment. It's like, okay, because you can open to the depth of suffering to the point it just blows us away. Mm-hmm. You know? And so learning to see, okay, how much can I open to and still stay grounded? And once that capacity gets there, the edge, then we learn how to, okay, how can I kind of care for myself, you know, have that sense of self-integrity, that sense of boundary. So it's this interesting play, and it kind of is really tied into our own set of conditioning. Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to just mention or say is that compassion itself isn't just opening to the suffering, it's also opening and asking what's needed, right? So when we have that capacity to act towards suffering in a way that starts to alleviate, even to some degree, then it becomes much more doable to open to. But if we're opening suffering that we have no control over, no way of dealing with it, it's so easy to become overwhelmed and swept away. And so playing with, you know, what is kind of your sphere of influence, you know, and just seeing, can you learn to play within that as you open to suffering and saying, can I, like seeing that homeless youth, you know, is there something concrete that you can do to support them?
Maybe it's, yeah. I looked straight in his eyes and, you know, to try to make a connection. And that was about the best I could do in the 30 seconds that, you know, we had. Yeah. But that had an impact on me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm I am trying to get much more experimental in my practice and play with things. So it sounds like you're suggesting that as well. So, okay.
Yes, exactly. You play with things, notice the effects of those different tweaks, if you will, those ways of working with it. And you'll find, you know, you'll find some kind of ways to navigate through this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it won't always work. You may have to find different ones, but that's part of, you know, your journey as a human being, as a practitioner.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Tim.
And then we all have, you know, different ways, different edges that come up for us in practice. Mm-hmm. In myriad different ways. All right. What else is out there in the physical room? Anyone want to ask or share anything? All right, Cheryl, come on up.
I'm going to talk about something that I didn't talk about in my group, but we kind of talked about this a little bit, the external and internal, and, you know, where am I, and, you know, what's really going on. And as I was listening to Jean and then Carlito, I don't know, it just occurred to me that there's this sense of a belief of who I am. And I think that's gotten really tossed around this year in a big way. And if I think that I am this external thing and you know, and it's all about what other people think about me, then I'm not internally aware.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of all those beliefs that are, anyway, I just wanted to throw that out because it's kind of the perception, you know, what's really true, what's real. It's kind of where it's at. And, yeah. You know, and as I work with right now, my, you know, working with impatience, you know, I am not impatient like, you know, we were talking about in the group, impatience is here now.
Mm.
And there's conditioning and there's this and that and what's internal and what's external and what do I actually want in this moment?
Mm.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, it's beautiful to have the awareness, you know, seep in and, you know, make sense.
Yeah, wonderful. Make,
you know, so the discernment is more so, yeah, I feel like, I don't remember how I was in January, but I feel like I'm different now.
Mm. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, the practice does transform us in ways we can sometimes see easily. Sometimes it's kind of not so obvious how those changes happen. And
actually, I want to say one other
yeah.
thing. At home, I notice when the ease is there and when, you know, when things are jiving, there's just more love. I feel better. There's just more love. And I think that's ultimately, you know, what's most important.
Yes. And that's part of the, you know, the journey of our practice and our integration of our lives is, you know, we see that sense of ease when things are flowing and there's that natural, we're more relaxed. You know, we have more, you know, access to our hearts. And learning to how do we find that access when we're in the midst of those kind of storms of, you know, external and internal and projection and all those things. How do I find our way back? And that's kind of that calling forth the Dharma is like, okay, where's the ox right now? You know, and when things are going well, the ox can be much more easily perceived. It's easily connected with and really getting to know that ox. And remembering that ox is still there, even though we've lost sight of it, you know, and, you know, we all have our set of conditions, our ways we get tangled up in our lives. And we just start to learn to navigate that and see how can I work with that? And by doing that, then at the end of the year, like, yeah, something is different. Something has changed. Yeah. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you, Cheryl. All right, Kathy.
These comments have all been so helpful. Particularly, Jean, I liked your idea about getting off that steep slope and just kind of going along on a sort of a mesa. I'm a sort of over efforter, I think. I mean, I think so. So, yeah, having a moment or two now and then in my day when I realize me isn't in the way. Once in a while, I just notice it. It's not something I can do, but I just notice, this was so quiet and something happened. I have found myself more available in a kinder way sometimes to people. Not all the time, but it's been a very rich series. I feel like I could go through another year of this, but anyway. Thanks, Tim, and Tori, too.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Yeah, these teachings, it's like they do. Like we could start over again, and we would have a whole different way of understanding it. I mean, this is the second time that at Sims we've gone through this series. Rodney did it back in, it was Bodell days, so I don't know when that was, probably.
I think it was 2011.
Yeah, so, 11 years ago, 12 years ago. So we should see things, we can hear the same teachings and hear, and, something else comes up, And that's the willingness just to say, okay, let yourself be changeable, let yourself evolve, let yourself, alter, that sense of contraction of self starts to loosen up more and more. So thank you, Kathy. All right, anyone else like to share or ask anything? All right, Dave.
Yeah, I have a question on the subject of effort. Maybe other people have had this experience where I can sometimes, like earlier today, get to a place of really like peace and ease and like a feeling of emptiness. And then in order to resume my life, there's like this real lack of motivation, I guess, there's a feeling of effort to like, well, I guess now I go back to work and I do chores and these things, like my job feels kind of out of sync with my deepest nature. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. Yeah. What comes to mind, I think it's important to kind of tease apart the kind of the meditative states or the meditative experiences from kind of the background perspective or orientation that we come from. So the states of mind, the states of meditation, that sense, like you described, that sense of being just very peaceful, there's nothing needs to change in this moment. And that kind of state is not very compatible with most jobs, right? Because most jobs, by definition, we're trying to do something, there's a need that needs to happen. And it seemed like how do I reconcile those two things? And it seemed like it's an impossible thing until we bring in the other piece. And that's this kind of long-term, slow over time, sometimes big shift of perspective. And this is kind of the orientation of where we're actually coming from as a human being, if you will. So it's like it starts to, and that is very transferable into any situation. Yeah, and basically, it's like the more contracted we are around the sense of who we are, how what we believe ourselves to be, the less flexible we're going to be in life. If we can line things up so they're all kind of meshing my mode or my attitude or my way of being in the world, then things are okay. But when something bumps up against that, then we experience a lot of suffering. Or when life says, okay, guess what? You don't get to do that job anymore. Or guess what? That person you relied on being in your life is no longer here. Or your family has changed, or divorces, or all health changes. All these things, the harder we hold on to life, the less flexible we are. And we start to realize that what we are is not defined by any particular perspective. Is actually something that's arising and passing away. That's just what I mean by this shift of perspective, this shift of orientation. that's what practice works on in the background. That we can kind of incline ourselves that way, but it really just happens through insight that arises of its own accord. And we find that then there's much more of this flexibility in life. That we see that, okay, here I am in the middle of a deep state of meditation, and here I am in the busyness of my life, and they both are held equally. There's an equalness to them. And the Satipatthana Sutta and the third foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha says, notice when the mind is concentrated, and notice when it's dispersed, and notice when it's tranquil, notice when it's distracted. He does not say, and one is better than the other. He says, just notice that. That's that shift of orientation. So you see that when we get kind of too tight around the states, yeah, it's incompatible to be, you know, in the midst of a tranquil state and I'm having to deal with a crisis. But that change of perspective is there. So that's why I think the way we practice in our life, it looks different than in a formal practice. Formal practice teaches us something, which is essential. But life is a way that we get to actually step up and manifest it. And how it shows up is really that fluidity. Just not, it's some way to say, it's like we don't take things so personally. That sense of me isn't so threatened. And that, by not being threatened, is much more adaptable to how life presents itself.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, maybe time for one more before we say goodbye for this year. Oh, she did. Yeah, so a couple announcements. There's an intro class starting on the 4th, is that right?